From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. Now, listen, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, we are sometimes accused of favoritism or bias. Nothing could be further from the truth. On this show, we make fun of everyone, regardless of species or genus. This week, we're going to prove it.
On today's show, it's Wait, Wait's Wild Animal Kingdom. Stories from our recent shows about animals. Sometimes stories about animals and their humans. Sometimes animals doing it for themselves. We're going to begin with a story that started small and went viral. It all began with Paula Poundstone answering a question on a show from February 2009, along with panelists Tom Baudet and Mo Rocca.
Paula, we read this week about an unsung hero, Jo Eglund of Norwich, England. She stood up, called upon the people in her community to help her out, and together they were able to provide 1,500 sweaters. For what purpose?
Her to wear.
No, they weren't for her. It was more selfless than that.
To make sweaters.
Yeah. I hate homemade sweaters.
Little sweaters.
They were little sweaters? Yeah. Oh, for cold dogs.
No, not dogs. Apparently.
Hamsters?
No. That would be cute, though.
They'd be itchy. Homemade sweaters are always itchy.
No.
You know what? If you got a cold hamster, just get it on the wheel.
Yeah, that's true. Get on the wheel. That's true.
Say to them when they wake up, I know you're cold now, but once you get up and get on the wheel, you're going to warm right up.
Yeah, don't take a shower first, just get right on the wheel.
That's exactly what I say to my son when I wake him up in the morning. I say, I know you're cold and tired now, but once you get up and going, you'll feel better. And then
you're not putting him on a wheel.
Put him on the wheel. Oh, sure I do.
Here's a hint. Here's a hint, Paula. Apparently,
what do you mean? I don't need a hint.
Yeah, I guess it's not hamsters.
Yeah, don't talk down to me. What?
Apparently, Cy Sperling's hair club for hens hasn't reached England yet.
For bald chickens?
For bald chickens.
Well, bald chickens, bald naturally.
Bald chickens. They don't have many options, of course. Chicken strength Rogaine is still years away from FDA approval. Thus, they have to depend on the kindness of people like Ms. Eglund. Egg factory chickens, you see, lose their feathers from stress.
No, I didn't know that.
It's true. Enter Ms. Eglund and her little hen rescue center. Her sweaters are a huge hit with the birds, not nearly as messy or labor-intensive as the feather plugs they had been providing.
Oh, jeez.
And the worst thing is the chickens with the plugs, they'll walk around and they pretend no one can tell. And you know.
Ain't nobody here but us chickens.
Now, if you weren't paying attention, you may have missed Mo's comment about the itchiness of homemade sweaters.
As you can imagine, such a slanderous statement about sweaters inspired a backlash and an apology the very next week.
On last week's show, we stepped into a bit of controversy, thanks to our panelist Mo Rocca. We were talking about a woman who made sweaters for bald chickens, you know, in the way that you do, when Mo said, and I quote Mo, "Ah, I hate homemade sweaters. Homemade sweaters are always itchy." Well, the knitting community was not amused by this, and they let us know. Mo Rocca joins us now. Mo, you had something you wanted to say?
Yes, Peter. I have a prepared statement I'd like to read.
Go ahead.
Last week, I used insensitive and inflammatory language, including the I word, to describe homemade sweaters. I sincerely regret offending anyone, even if there is an explanation. You see, 20 years ago, as an exchange student in Quito, I stayed with a host family of alpaca farmers. The Garcias were never less than gracious, but their home was small, so I was forced to bunk with their teenaged alpaca, Chucho. And so for months afterwards, I couldn't stop scratching myself. None of this makes my recent comments any less offensive, so please accept my apology.
Very gracious, Mo. Now, some of these knitters, particularly from Ravelry.com, the knitting site, they say they're going to prove you wrong by making and sending you a soft, non-itchy sweater.
Mm. I'd like to have a soft, non-itchy car. So.
I'd like to have a bald chicken.
I'd love a sweater. Is it made from alpaca? Mm-hmm.
I don't know. They
it's made from that very alpaca.
They tracked it down. Well, Mo, thank you so much for your gracious apology.
I thank you for your time, and I'll be happy to model whatever sweater is made with me with pride.
All right. Mo, we'll see you soon. Thanks for joining us today. Bye-bye.
And then finally, on a show we did in May of 2009 with Mo, Paula, and Adam, a face-to-face confrontation and a conversion.
Back in February, Mo Rocca did the unforgivable on our show. He insulted homemade sweaters. He said he hated them. He said they were, quote, too itchy. Well, this caused quite a stir among an online community of knitters at Ravelry.com. And I might be, there they are, I might be surprising and scaring Mo when I say they are here right now.
I can feel their needles.
There are knitters in the house. And they're here, and we understand they've actually brought you some gifts they made.
Well, that's very flattering. It's so great. I'll make sure to insult the makers of BMW next week.
So after the show is over, we're going to take some photos of Mo modeling his new homemade knitwear, and we're going to post it to our website. So,
for premium members only.
Yes, of course.
You know what? I hate Zenya suits.
I hate real estate.
Yeah?
I hate large, valuable tracts of coastal land.
You know what really burns me up?
What burns you up?
Those bricks of gold.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. You know, they're so uncomfortable.
Who can spend those?
I really hate the bailout.
Photos of Mo modeling the sweater can be found at our website, waitwait.npr.org.
Of course, we're not just interested in contemporary animals. We're interested in prehistoric creatures as well. Here's a question from February of 2009 posed to Roy Blunt Jr. while Paul Provenza and Roxanne Roberts kibitzed.
Roy, according to research published in the science journal Nature, it was just 380 million years ago that two lonely sea creatures did what for the first time?
Two lonely school teachers? No. Sea creatures.
I guess your version could have happened as well.
I had an answer for the school teachers. I don't know.
Well, a lot of sea creatures are found in schools.
There you go. That's true. I think I read this. I think intercourse?
You're right, yes. Yeah. Scientists.
I was going to say that for the school teachers. I should have just gone ahead and answered, and we could have moved on by now.
Scientists have wondered where mating actually evolved, and they now believe it was longer ago than they thought. They've been studying the fossils of these shark-like placoderms, that's a now extinct fish, and they found what they believe to be fossilized evidence that those ancient fish actually mated. Prior to this discovery, most researchers believed copulation began sometime around 1964, on or around the release of the first Rolling Stones record.
That's right.
Say that, like, oh, they think it happened, then what makes them think that?
There are two things. First of all, they found some rather complicated technical anatomical features in the fossils that are common to fish that were able to do that. And also they found a fossilized letter to a magazine called Placoderm Forum. And it starts, this has never happened before. But so,
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me.
We also covered the important area where fish intersect politics. It's on this show from May of 2006, a show with Adam Felber, Roy Blunt Jr., and Paula Poundstone. Adam, when asked to name the highlight of their presidencies, Jimmy Carter said it was the Camp David peace accords. Bill Clinton said it was ending the war in the Balkans. Well, in an interview just this week with a German magazine, President Bush was asked to name the highlight of his presidency. He thought about it and then answered, What?
I'm president? Wow, I should throw me a party or something. No. He said that it was catching a 7.5-pound perch in his own lake.
That's right. What it was.
Yeah. And I'd like to defend the president on this. Okay. I think he was right.
He was asked about the best moment of his presidency, and he said, I quote, "You know, I've experienced many great moments, and it's hard to name the best. I would say the best moment of all was when I caught a 7.5-pound perch in my lake," unquote.
Before he caught the perch, he tried diplomacy.
And he said,
he gave it a chance.
I know. He said, "But what was I supposed to do? Trust the word of a mad fish?"
It's a big mission accomplished sign over the lake. Boy, that aircraft carrier barely fit in that lake, did it?
It was supposed to say fish in the conference.
Yeah.
All he wants to do is fish. All he wants to do is fish. Don't have a home, don't have a name.
Support for NPR comes from Chevrolet, maker of the Volt. It's more car than electric. Available soon in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, everybody. This week, it's everything that creeps and crawls and slithers and sometimes things that just stay hidden in a smuggler's pants. It's an all-animal edition of Wait, Wait.
The herpetologists in the audience are getting upset because we haven't featured any lizards. Well, that ends now, with this moment from a show from November 2006 with Paula Poundstone, Paul Provenza, and Roy Blunt Jr.
Paula, some reptilian news for you. It turns out that scientists in France have determined that lizards do indeed have what?
Conscience.
They feel bad about being lizards.
No, I have a bearded dragon lizard, and every time she eats a cricket, she gets this kind of funny look on her face.
It's like, not indigestion?
Like it was, you know, it was yummy, but on the other hand...
It's a cricket-eating bird.
You're close. Well, I mean, it's sort of like now if your friend sets you up with a lizard, they can assure you that the lizard has a really nice one.
I don't know. Scent? I don't know.
No. Does anybody know what I'm getting at?
Personality.
Yes, lizards have personality.
Oh, I didn't even know that was in question. I love my bearded dragon lizard.
Well, most people do not believe lizards had much of a personality. They just sit there, they eat, they do their lizard thing.
It's absolutely not true. My lizard listens to the show, and every time Roy does a poem, he says, "Turn it up." Full of personality.
So, you know.
Oh, I didn't know. I never suspected that they didn't.
Well,
who said they didn't?
Most people have thought that they were pretty much all alike, but herpetologists have discovered that lizards actually have distinct personality types, variations within lizards.
Huh.
So they determined that some lizards are naturally warm and bubbly. They like to hang out with their friends. Mm-hmm. Other lizards are quiet loners who keep to themselves.
Well, what lunatic didn't think that was true? Why do you think there was only one Godzilla?
I had a lizard in my apartment once.
Don't brag.
No, it was supposed to be a monitor lizard, because I read... It was a monitor lizard.
Yeah,
I
kept watching you.
There was a certain kind of... He stood out in the hall, yeah.
With a clipboard.
Yeah, yeah, and a little...
It was supposed to be a gecko. I read somewhere that if you put a gecko in your apartment, they will eat your cockroaches. But they didn't have a gecko. So I got this monitor lizard, and that lived in my apartment, and every now and then somebody would say, "What in the fuck?" But it wouldn't eat lizards. I mean, it wouldn't eat cockroaches. It was a sad thing. It died.
Yep.
You didn't feed it? You just put it down the floor?
I gave it peanut butter and things. It wouldn't eat that. It wouldn't eat peanut butter or cockroaches. So what? What was I going to do?
Did your lizard...
cockroaches on the peanut butter on the cockroaches.
No wonder your lizard had personality issues.
Roy went further. Not only does it have personality, it has a personality disorder.
That's right.
That's right.
Off
to see the
lizard. Off to see the lizard. Deja, deja, deja.
In August of 2007, we did our show in Boulder, Colorado, and a former bouncer for the Rolling Stones turned large animal veterinarian named Kevin Fitzgerald came by to play Not My Job. Now, just about everybody can remember a moment when a trusted father figure turned to you and said, "Son or daughter, you got to make something of your life." But in these stories, it isn't usually Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones, but that is who set Kevin Fitzgerald in his life path. And thus chastened, he went on to become the world's only former rock and roll bouncer slash veterinarian slash star of Animal Planet. He is a proud Denver native. We are pleased to have him with us today. Kevin Fitzgerald, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. So, first of all, is that story true? Was it, in fact, Keith Richards who said to you, in effect, "Go to veterinary school, young man," or whatever?
Well, Keith was in charge of the bouncers, so at the end of the tour, he'd take care of it, you know, and he'd say, "Okay, pay whatever was happening." The end of the 78 tour, he said, "Man, you know, you've been with us 69, 72, 75, 78. Why don't you do something? You know, this isn't going to last forever." You know, they knew that the public was fickle.
He was so wrong about that.
I know,
it turns
never,
out.
They never knew that still, you know, and he goes, "You know, you can't be bouncing when you're 50. Why don't I help you? Go to school, do something, you know, get a grip, you know, do." So I flew back to Denver, and my brother picked me up at the airport, and I said, "Man, Keith told me I should get a grip on my life."
And he took that seriously.
Well, he's the hippest cat in the world. When he says something, you listen.
Sure, absolutely.
So, yeah, and he's so nice, and he was right. So he helped me, and here I am, you know. So.
There you are. Well, let me ask this. You were a rock and roll bouncer for a long time. That's essentially the guy who protects the band from the rowdy fans, in essence, right?
Yeah, you know, the people would come over the top and you'd thump heads, you know.
Oh, yeah. You thumped a lot of heads in your time?
No. The good thing was if you could talk to them and say, "Look, man, you're going to have breakfast on the county." 99 out of 100 times you talk to them, you say, "Go back, you know, be good. Don't be naughty."
Really? Yeah. You'd actually say that in the middle of a rock and roll concert, some guy drunk or high on whatever starts rushing the stage and you say, "Don't be naughty." And they're like, "Okay." Because I have a 7-year-old daughter. She doesn't go for that. You know, she just keeps going.
It's a good story now. It's the way I'd like to remember.
All right, I see. But that's interesting enough. You did that for a long time. And then you went into veterinary medicine. Was it like, "All right, finally, I want to deal with real animals"? Or what was the connection? How did you make that transition?
Well, I always liked science and liked animals and liked people. You know, yeah. I think to be a good veterinarian, you have to like people. And so... it's been a great thing for me. You know, the music was great for teaching about, you know, human nature, but I couldn't do any instruments or play anything. I like to sing. I'd rather sing than eat, but most people would rather hear me eat.
So you were a frustrated musician yourself?
Well, no, but that way you got to be a little boy from Denver, get to travel with bands or Bill Graham and Barry Fay, see the world, you know, was great.
Yeah, sure, I understand.
Yeah.
Wow. And when you're working with animals, because, of course, as people have seen on your various Animal Planet specials, including Emergency Room Vet.
Emergency Vets, yeah.
Emergency Vets. I mean, you've dealt with some exotic animals and in trouble. Did dealing with crazed rock stars train you for that? I mean, were you like, "Hey, I helped Ozzy Osbourne down from a bad trip. I can deal with this piranha," or whatever it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, I worked for the Grateful Dead. What can happen in here?
So, and in fact, as we've seen on television, but even other things, working here at a veterinary hospital near Denver, you've dealt with some pretty bizarre animals. I mean, not just your dogs and cats, but a lot of exotic creatures. And
well, sadly, for better or worse, the animals go in fads. You know, last year, hedgehogs and, you know, sugar gliders, 10 years ago, pot-bellied pigs, and right now it's spiders.
You know, spiders?
Wait a minute. Last year was hedgehogs?
Yeah, they just legalized wallabies here in Colorado for pet stores.
No. So,
yeah. Wow. I didn't know it happened. On Christmas Day, you know, I always work Christmas and let the married people be with their families, and then I get St. Patrick's Day off.
Right, there you go.
and then a little wallaby got out of his house and he saw
on Christmas.
Yeah, the dogs were chasing it. And
all right, stop for a second. Until this very moment, I thought a wallaby was a kind of shoe, so you need to help me out. A wallaby is a what exactly?
A shoe, good.
It is a shoe, but if a dog's chasing it, can go fast.
Yeah. So this little wallaby, he's a little kind of a kangaroo, a smaller one, and he gets out in Capitol Hill in Denver, and he's running down the street, and two dogs start chasing him and mauling him, and this policeman that I take care of, his dog, he sees the little thing, and he didn't know what it was. He was so sweet and innocent. Somebody wants to save it and help it, so he takes his jacket off and shoes it into the back of the squad car and brings it to me. So he's walking off the walk, and I say, "Hey, John, is your schnauzer sick?" And he goes, "No, I think I got a mutant rabbit."
Really, I got to tell you, because I think I saw one of those, and I didn't know if I had just been inhaling the Boulder air too much.
They shouldn't sell. So like right now, they're selling these giant spiders, you know, hobo spiders, wolf spiders, giant tarantulas in the sky. Being veterinarians, we're not supposed to be afraid of any animals, and I'm afraid of spiders. They creep you out the way they move. They got hair and saliva. That's wrong. A bug shouldn't have hair on it. And, I mean, that just goes without saying.
Yeah, hell.
So this guy comes, and he's got this plastic shoebox and this giant spider. He goes, "Be really careful. It got out a year ago. He bit my room in the face, and he had to have his head drained." And I was like, ah. I was like, "Get a phone book, you know." But, you know. You know, but that's not a practice builder dropping a phone book on your patient. Even I know that.
Right.
That's when you got to call your cop friend back.
Yeah. So I read where it takes 1 second to be nice and 2 seconds to be mean, so we should be nice to each other. And so I said, "Well, sir, what's wrong with him?" He goes, "Well, he's just not himself." "Not his perky spider self?" "Called in late for work?" He goes, "No, he hasn't eaten in several weeks, and yesterday his leg fell off." I'm trying to think of something learned to tell this guy and get him out of there, right? So I say, "You know, in my experience, sir, when the leg falls off, they're obviously ill." It sounded good, right? And I remembered that the Museum of Natural History in City Park has old Dr. Licht over there, the spider expert. I said, "Go see Dr. Licht. He's going to help you." About an hour later, the phone rings. It's Licht. And he goes, "Dr. Fitzgerald, Dr. Licht." I go, "Hey." He goes, "Did you send Mr. Montgomery over here with this big-ass spider?" Yeah. He goes, "Did you tell him, in your opinion, when the leg fell off, they're obviously ill?" "You would have taken time to examine him. You'd see he's in fact dead."
Do you yourself have animals? Do you have pets?
I'm between pets right now. I'm waiting for a good one.
Really? You're just not ready to settle down. You're like,
yeah, you know, the commitment.
Right.
No.
I can get you a handcuffed wallaby.
Well, Kevin Fitzgerald, we're delighted to have you with us today. We have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
"Now hold still while I inject this bovine steroid into your buttocks."
Actually, that strikes me that could be something you know something about, but... Now that Barry Bonds is the all-time home run champion, we thought it'd be a good time to ask you three questions taken from the book about his good friends at BALCO. That's the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative. The guys who Bonds swears did not really give him steroids, at least not that he knew about. We have three questions about BALCO from the book Game of Shadows. Answer two correctly, you'll win a chance for one of our listeners to win our prize, namely to have Carl's voice injected directly into their buttocks. Because that's Carl's secret. That's how he achieves that deep resonant tone. That's your secret.
You had to tell.
Yeah. Also, of course, his voice on your home answering machine. Carl, who is Kevin Fitzgerald playing for?
Peter, Kevin is playing for Charlie and Regina Bruce of Denver, Colorado.
Now, Barry got his alleged supplements from a man named Victor Conti, head of Balco. But before he became the so-called steroid Svengali, he had moderate success as which of the following? A, a street caricature artist known as Vincent Van Picasso down on San Francisco's Fisherman's Wharf. B, a rock bass player in the Bay Area funk band Tower of Power. Or C, a used car salesman twice named the Northern California Salesman of the Year.
I think he was in Tower of Power.
You think he was?
I did a thing with Little Feet in the Tower of Power horn section were there. I think the guy played for Tower of Power.
You're right, he did. Very good. My God. This may be the first time in the history of this game that anyone used actual knowledge to answer a question correctly. All right. Next question. Not everyone thinks that Conti is a villain. In fact, one associate once publicly compared his work supplying allegedly illegal steroids to various athletes to the work of whom? A, physicist Stephen Hawking. B, nun and soon-to-be Saint Mother Teresa. Or C, former Surgeon General C. Everett Koop.
Mother Teresa.
You're exactly right. Did you know that? Because you were like, oh, that's what it is. Did you know that?
No, but she's so nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, according to the book Game of Shadows, this flattery came from Balco's, quote, medical doctor, a guy named Dr. Brian Goldman, who, yes, did in fact work alongside Mother Teresa for a year. But one thing you should know, he reportedly did not get along with her. So that might have been a more biting comparison than you might think.
People don't realize she was not as nice as people thought.
No.
She spoke highly of you.
Well, I'll tell you something. This,
I don't know, if you're working with Mother Teresa and you can't get along with her, I just think you have some workplace issues.
Last question. After giving up on his music career, of course, Conti decided to become an amateur nutritionist. He founded Balco, selling supplements to athletes, professional and amateur. Which of these was one of Conti's early products? A, Zap Your Zits with Zinc. Is exactly what it sounds like, a scheme to market zinc supplements as an acne medication. B, Man's Best Friend, an early erectile dysfunction drug that contained near toxic amounts of artificial testosterone. Or C, Home Run Derby Bubble Gum, chewing gum just like the big leaguers chew, with low levels of anabolic steroids just like the big leaguers use.
Man, I think using, you know, crazy glue in a wood burning kit, zap your zits with zinc. Yeah, I think zinc. Yeah, I'm going to say that. Zap your zits. You can't say it.
I just want to say this before I give you the right answer. I want your mind. I want to be able... I want to be able to just feel my way in the way that you have to the truth, because you're right. It was zap your zits with zinc. I'm sorry. What was that about crazy glue? What?
And a wood-burning kit.
And a wood-burning kit? Yeah. And you're like, oh, well, then it must be the right answer. And you're like, it worked for you, but how did that work? What was that about?
We had this girl at my school, you know, and she, that's what she would use, you know. She said crazy glue on them would make them go away. And we just looked like idiots, my brother and I. But she was pretty and we did what she told us.
Of course you did.
What was the wood-burning kit for?
Some of the really bad ones.
Well, that girl must have been gorgeous, man. That's all I got to say. No, it was zap your zits with zinc. Conti wrote a scientific paper extolling the benefits of zinc on the skin after one of his customers, an Olympic swimmer, said that after using the supplements, his acne disappeared. Unfortunately for Conti, the idea did not catch on.
Because it was at the end of the counter with all the Z products.
Yeah, exactly. People just do it alphabetically. It occurs to me, it's a shame you didn't have that crazy glue when the spider came in. You could have sent the guy home happy. Yeah. Well, apparently what happened was Conti, you know, a lot of his herbal and supplements like that didn't work, so we decided to start selling far more effective medications. Carl, how did Kevin Fitzgerald do on our quiz?
He was amazing, Peter. 3 correct answers, so Kevin wins for Charlie and Regina Bruce. Congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Well done. That was like Zen mastery. That was crazy.
It was unbelievable.
Colorado's own Kevin Fitzgerald, veterinarian, is the star of Animal Planet's Emergency Vet Interns and, of course, a one-time rock and roll bouncer. Kevin Fitzgerald, thank you for joining us. It was great fun. Thank you for being here. Well done. In just a minute, there's a huge reticulated python under your porch. Who are you going to call? Our Not My Job guest, that's who. Plus, our ongoing love affair with the squirrel. Support for NPR comes from The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world, and the connections between them on newsstands, iPhone, and iPad, and at The Economist Online. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age, and Lumber Liquidators, whose flooring includes pre-finished and stained solid hardwoods, bamboo cork, and laminates. Information at lumberliquidators.com. We will be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks so much. You're great. This week, and this is why you're clapping, it's the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Morning Zoo.
Animals can be cute. They can be our friends, or they can be lethal threats to our way of life. And when that happens, the man to call is Bob Freer. He is the founder of a wild animal shelter in South Florida and was our guest when we visited, along with Charlie Pierce, Roxanne Roberts, and Paula Poundstone in January of 2005.
Now, if you're in South Florida and there's an alligator swimming in your backyard pool, who are you going to call? Bob Freer, that's who. He is the founder of the Everglades Outpost, an exotic animal sanctuary, and he is the go-to guy when something with big teeth crawls out of the swamp. He joins us now without any of his animal friends, we stipulated. Bob Freer, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Now, this is true. South Florida is filled, on the one hand, with an awful lot of people living in their homes near the ocean and all kinds of lovely things, and very nearby, a very large wilderness with lots of animals in it, and sometimes the two meet. And this is where you come in.
This is where I come in.
Okay, so describe what you do.
Basically, we take in hurt and injured wildlife, rehabilitate it, release it back to the wild. We have a lot of problem with exotics down here, the large pythons. So we've gone out and caught up large snakes out of people's backyards, or they'll crawl up into their cars.
Pythons are not native to South Florida, am I mistaken?
Nope, you're correct. They're not native, but unfortunately we sell them by the thousands through pet stores. Kids will buy them when they're little and small. And then when they get to be about 10 foot large and bite them, then they realize they don't like them anymore and release them out in the Everglades.
Oh, my gosh.
Imagine not wanting a 10-foot thing that bites you. Ungrateful whelps.
So can you give us an example of sort of the most extreme examples of the things you've had to go take care of?
One of the extreme one would be we had some ostriches that were running loose by Emmy International Airport. Apparently somebody had some pet ostriches in their backyard. They escaped, and they were running around at night, and if someone had lights on in their house, they'd see the reflection of themselves in their window.
The and ostriches then, would.
The ostrich would, yeah. And they would peck.
See, the ostriches were like, hey, more ostriches!
And they'd try to get closer, and that'd break the windows. And so we got a panic call that there was ostriches running around breaking windows at Miami International Airport.
So what did you do about the ostriches?
Well, we went up, and I had a tranquilizer gun, so this made it easy. But unfortunately, I only had enough for one ostrich.
That's a common mistake when facing down the ostriches.
Don't worry, man. I'll take one for all of us.
All right, so you have one tranquilized ostrich.
If I had only one tranquilizer, you know who'd take it, don't you? It'd be a lot easier to get them if I'm a little loose.
So what happened?
Well, the one was easy. We tranquilized it.
Yeah, well. Yes.
And the other one, on seeing us carrying off his partner, decided to charge after us. and we're kind of surveying the situation to decide which way to run. And it's as it's running, it's throwing its feet out. Basically, it's trying to strike you with his feet, and he has his head down, and he actually kicked himself in the back of the head. And...
Well, luckily, you tranquilized the smart one.
Yes, it broke his neck.
I imagine, though, I mean, ostriches, well, they're, I mean, okay, you say they're dangerous, I believe you, but some of these animals are scary.
That wasn't scary?
Well, all right.
It's an 8-foot bird with a claw about the size of a garden rake.
But I'm thinking about, like some of these snakes. I mean, have you ever had, like, difficulty going after some of these huge snakes? And
actually, we get a few calls during a week on the large snakes now. Basically, Everglades National Park is pretty much overrun with the pythons. They are breeding out there.
Oh, hang on. I have to cancel my airboat tour.
Okay. 9 years ago, we had a call come in with a snake about a mile south of us underneath somebody's home. And about five of us went out to take a look at it and shined a flashlight underneath the house, and we saw this snake, big snake.
How big?
Well, we weren't sure, but we knew it was big.
All right. Incredible.
But we're mostly, you know, adults, a little on the heavy side, and we're looking at the small hole under there and realized that it wasn't going to be easy for any of us. But at that time, we had a young kid with us, a volunteer.
A volunteer, you said?
Yeah. A volunteer, yes.
Yeah.
So we told him to make sure not to tell his mother. But...
Do you have any children, just... out of curiosity.
Not anymore.
Yeah. Yes, I have one.
No, but he's got a giant snake.
All right, so you're there, under the porch. Big snake. We don't know how big. Small hole.
Fortunately, you got Oliver with you.
You put your arm around this eager young child who's come along with you to help with the cute little animals, and you say what?
I want to tie a rope to your feet.
Oh, Lord.
I'm going to give you a broom handle with a towel tied to the end of it. I want you to crawl on your belly in there, and when you get close to the snake, just poke the towel at him. And then when the snake bites the towel, you scream, we'll pull you out.
So what happened?
Just that. He crawled under there, and he screamed, and we started pulling.
Uh-huh. And where is this young man being kept now?
How big was the snake?
When you got it out.
Oh, okay. When we pulled the snake out, it was actually 26 feet long. The kid weighed about 90 pounds, and the snake weighed 320 pounds.
Was it a hand towel?
It was a napkin.
Yeah.
All I've got to say, we're glad you're out there. Bob Freer, it is a pleasure to have you here. We have asked you here, in fact, to play a game we're calling...
You look fabulous in those 40 pounds of rhinestones.
If you want to talk about which musician of the 20th century was most influential, not the most talented, not the most popular, but influential, it's got to be Liberace. He's the guy who first showed that a lack of talent was no barrier to great success if you had style. We've got three questions for you about the man who did classical without the class. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Bob Freer playing for?
Peter, he is playing for Ann Ortoleva of Boca Raton, Florida.
Excellent. All right. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. Liberace coined one of the most famous show business quotes of all time. I laughed all the way to the bank. He said it in response to a nasty comment from a New York music critic named John Crosby. What did Mr. Crosby say? A, quote, listening to his music is like being force-fed 20 pounds of sugar beets soaked in molasses. B, quote, if women vote for Liberace as a piano player, and I'm sure they do, it raises questions about their competence to vote for anything. Or C, quote, what this world needs is a sociopathic music lover with a sledgehammer and access to Mr. Liberace's hands.
I'm going to say C.
You're going to go say C, asking for someone to take a sledgehammer to his hands.
Yeah.
No, it was actually B. If women vote for Liberace as a piano player, and I'm sure they do, it raises questions about their competence to vote for anything, which inspired, perhaps justifiably, Mr. Liberace's put down. All right, you still have two more chances.
Okay. So
not a problem. Liberace was known for his remarkable sense of style, which extended to his private life as well. He had one particular quirk, though, when it came to the design of his homes. What was it? A. He hated the sight of toilets and kept trying to hide them. B. He hated mirrors because, quote, you can't airbrush a reflection, unquote. Or C. He refused to have a kitchen, saying food is not prepared, it is presented when one is hungry, unquote.
I'm not going to choose B. I think he'd like mirrors.
You think he'd like mirrors?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to go with not have a kitchen.
Not have a kitchen?
Yeah.
No, it was toilets.
It was toilets.
Yeah, he hated toilets. He couldn't stand them. He kept trying to figure out a way to keep them completely out of sight. In fact, he even wanted them to sort of, like, rise up only when needed, you know, on, like, motors. That didn't work, but he settled ultimately to simply having the bathroom off his master bedroom in his main home done up as a gold throne. All right, last question. Let's see if you can pick one up. The end of Liberace's life was marked by a palimony suit filed by his longtime companion, Scott Thorson. Mr. Thorson described Liberace as a controlling Svengali who demanded absolute obedience and what else? A. Liberace forced Thorson to have plastic surgery to look like him so Liberace could feel like he was romancing himself. B. Thorson was allowed to eat only the food that Liberace left on his plate. Or C. Thorson was required to walk no closer to him in public than 20 feet, and if asked, he was to say he was Liberace's personal laundry attendant.
C.
C. You're absolutely confident. It's C. Oh. Walk 20 feet behind me. If anybody asks, I don't know you.
I'm confident.
It was It was the plastic surgery. Yeah. Oh. As gross as that is, it apparently was true. According to Thorson's book, Liberace looked upon Thorson as the bandages were removed and said, quote, a beauty, a star is born. By the way, Thorson's settlement for his palimony suit included a gold Rolls Royce, which probably made up for a lot. So, Carl, how did Bob Freer do in our quiz?
I think you struck out, Peter. No correct answers, so he needed at least two to win for Ann Ortolava, and he had none.
I got to say, I think it's good that you lost. You don't want, with your job, your mind muddled with unnecessary facts. Great. Bob Freer is the founder of the Everglades Outpost, a wildlife refuge in Homestead, Florida. He can also be seen wrestling gators back to the swamp on the Animal Planet TV show, Miami Animal Police. Bob Freer, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you.
Now, here's a story about when an animal was most unwelcome. It came at the end of a lightning fill-in-the-blank round with Tom Beaudet in March 2007. Adam Felber and Angela Nissel provided commentary. Right. A shoplifter trying to make a clean getaway from Seattle Linens and Things was foiled when his girlfriend blanked.
Told him he'd snatched the wrong colored towels.
No. Dropped her pet duck.
You know, when I'm going to do a caper.
Yeah. Well, here's a warning to all
you
would-be
criminals. How many
times
did I tell her before we did this job? We rehearsed it time and time again. Yeah. Don't drop the duck, I said. Just hold. All you got to do is hold on to the duck, and it's worked. Jeez, I can't believe it.
I mean, at least the lady in Gaza at least strapped the alligators on. You think you could belt the duck to you, and then you know, it'd be like a hands-free sort of thing. Then.
Next time I knock over a linen store, no ducks! In retrospect, that was the most deeply flawed part of our plan.
If Wait Wait has a favorite animal, it's got to be squirrels. We love their antics, their cute bushy tails, and we love the adorable interventions into their natural life cycle. Here's Amy Dickinson answering a question in March of 2007 with Tom Baudet and Adam Felber helping out.
Yes, in an attempt to control squirrel populations in Palisades Park, California, officials are blanking.
Injecting them with contraceptive hormones.
You're right.
Was that a guess?
I did read the paper!
Wow!
That's exactly right.
Awesome!
Now, there are too many squirrels. They want to do something humane. They're going to inject birth control hormones into the squirrels. Officials decided on using injections after they discovered that their earlier plan had failed because the female squirrels were storing the birth control pills in trees and forgetting where they put them.
Couldn't they just get, like, the Beverly Hillbillies to come over and shoot some?
No, this is California. We don't do that.
You know, anybody's with California. If you could catch a squirrel, hold him still long enough to give him a contraceptive shot, you could also just kill him.
Right, that's what I'm thinking. You can wring its little neck.
No. This is California. They gave the squirrels family planning. They did counseling.
And a talking to.
Yeah, a talking to.
A very stern talking to.
A little pamphlet. Tiny little pamphlet.
Tiny.
Postage size stamp. Pamphlet entitled Straight Talk About Nuts.
Right.
Thank you. Good night.
And finally, here's a question we posed to Adam Felber in April of 2007, a question which inspired a classic rant from Paula Poundstone. Kerry O'Connor was also there. Adam, this week the National Academy of Sciences announced the results of a study that chimpanzees have done what more than humans?
Elected the right public servants.
Possibly true.
Evolved?
Yes, evolved. Exactly right. Yeah. The University of Michigan studied strings of DNA shared by humans and chimps and found that the genes of chimpanzees have evolved in beneficial ways more than that of human beings. They have proceeded further, better.
How are they? I don't know what they mean by that.
Let me put it this way.
I don't have that much to feel proud about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It does kind of take us down.
I just took away one more thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The chimpanzees are evolving, and
the
we're not.
Thing. So how have they? What did they do? I don't even see what they've done.
It actually has to do with DNA. They're looking at the DNA from the moment that chimpanzees and humans separated from their common ancestor, and they're looking at the amount of modifications and evolution in the DNA, and they've discovered more of beneficial evolution in the DNA of the chimpanzees.
Well, let me just point this out. Who's looking at the DNA?
You're right.
Yeah. Dr. Bobo?
You seem a little defensive here, Paula.
Well, I think she's got a good point. If there is a Dr. Bobo who wrote this article, he's clearly biased. Bad monkey.
This is really ticking you off, I think. Are you?
Yeah, it kind of does. It just seems like, first of all, what's the point of the study, number one? This study.
Just to make us feel worse than we already do, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I don't understand how they're defining evolution, then.
It's a quantitative thing. I mean, they're just talking about the number of beneficial mutations. Like, maybe their beneficial mutations aren't completely super terrific and great, but they have more of them. Than
What is a? Give me an example of a beneficial mutation in a chimp.
How about the ability to grab things with his feet? How's that? Can you do that?
There's one.
I don't need to, because if I need something, I go, hey, chimp, you want to get your foot over the other?
You can bet that right now someone out there is typing a very angry letter with their feet.
You see it's true.
Shoo-bidi-doo.
An ape like me.
Scooby-dooby-dooby.
Can learn to be human too.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections and celebrating National Adoption Month at aecf.org. AMARC Foundation, supporting procon.org, a website for teachers and the public to explore the pros and cons of controversial issues. And the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago, in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Goedeker writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Blythe Haga. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Delarchik and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Waltrover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Thanks to Carl Castle and all our panelists and guests. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR.